No Good Deed, a Star Wars fanfiction, written by Anonymous Radish and read by Katana.
Lord Vader! Lord Vader!
Awareness punches into him with an electroshock from his suit. Pain made to stimulate anger, anger to stimulate power. There is a grating, hissing wheeze rattling the clouded air. There is dust and sparks in the ripe miasma of death. There is a face hovering over him, and for the first time in a decade and a half, he sees it not in a harsh field of grays and reds, but in color. His mask is cracked. His suit, he can feel, is rent to shreds. Deep brown eyes stare at him out of a pale face with rosy cheeks, surrounded by a frizzy halo of brown hair that had been tossed rather askew. The baleful Princess Organa sits streaked and angrily frantic as she shakes at him, as she dares to touch him. There is air on his skin. He can feel it, a gaping tear in his suit from chest to groin, and then hands. He'd gasp if he had any control of his lungs.
"You're bleeding, Lord Vader,"
the princess snaps at him, as everything around them rattles dangerously. He has not been touched by another living being since just after Mustafar, and the last person to touch him in the flesh had been his master, and that touch had not been kind. Neither is Princess Organa's, though he does not think the foolish chit means to be cruel. No, she does not have the upbringing for that. She does not have the temperament.
"You're burned,"
her voice wavers, hands pressing down on wounds that have been burned and bleeding for more than a decade. What does she think she's doing?
Cease,
he demands, feeling the softness of her hands, like the flaying edge of a scalpel, feeling her press down on the pressure in his lower half. That grating, hissing wheeze, it seems, is himself. That would account, then, for the heaviness in his chest. At least one lung is punctured, filling the cavity with either blood or air, or both. He can taste blood. But that is not new. He can always taste blood, the scent of it thick within his suit, the rust-rot tang of his own ruined flesh an ever-present reminder.
"You can't die on me after saving my life," the teenager retorts furiously, pressing down harder on whatever wounds she imagines she sees. "I refuse to mourn you, you horrible lumbering nightmare."
He should snap her neck for her insolence. Should have done it minutes ago. Should have let her be torn to rags with the rest of her party as the rebels attacked. The Onderon cell he'd been hunting, no doubt. Invigoratingly vicious for their kind. Attacking their own sympathizers just to get to one or two real Imperial players. Why had he shielded her? She was infuriating, just like her wretched parents before her. Her death may have at least served as an appropriate warning to Alderaan to reassess their loyalties to these insurrectionist fools. Vader knew they were rebel sympathizers. It had yet to be proven, and Tarkin has tried his hand more than once over the years to out them, where Yularen's proper investigations had failed, with his usual pompous arrogance. There had been an incident years ago when Tarkin had decided to detain Senator Organa at his own discretion for investigation, and Vader had had to clean up the mess and return the Viceroy to his wife before Queen Breha radicalized half the sentence in a storm of poised fury and righteous cause. Tarkin had been too hasty in the early years of the Empire, and overstepped himself more than once. That was not an altercation he could have won, nor could he have afforded. Bail Organa was a thorn in the side of the Empire's core loyalists, the premier representative of the Republic Traditionalists faction, but he was moderate and outright meek compared to some of those who might take his place. If anything happened to her husband, it was beyond doubt that whomever Queen Breha sent out to follow him would be cut from a far different cloth. The woman who held in her grasp the most prosperous and stable sector in the Corps was only serene on the surface. She was an awaiting avalanche underneath, and even Lord Sidious knew not to press such a prominent powerhouse too far for the Empire's sake. Not yet, at least. But none of that had necessitated his stepping between the princess and her imminent and bloody demise. And yet, he had done so without thought. Or perhaps she had been the one to step behind him? Yes, perhaps that was so. The result was the same, however. Her rifling her hands along his flesh, pressing hard on the unseen cause of the blood pooling beneath him. And before he can wrench her from her futile, arrogant endeavors, he can feel that pressure give way in involuntary release. He'll kill her after all, he considers, black spots dancing in the new colors of his vision as the putrid stench of urine breaches the air and rage overtakes him at the humiliation he is being made to endure because of this worthless girl. She wrenches her hands away, and how dare she? How dare she feel disgust when he can't even grasp at his rage, at the power of it. There's a dull hammer in the back of his skull, pounding away, and the wheezing has stopped because there is no more room for him to breathe, no matter how much the respirator attempts to force the issue. And as surely as he cannot move for whatever affliction has paralyzed his spine, as surely as his suit snaps him with another electric shock, he finds himself unable to render his power into anything useful, even as he all but chokes on it, so impotently. There is a tearing sound, and then her hands are back on him, pressing down, sopping up the mess as shouts ring out in the distance, clamoring for attention against the voice of his own rage inside his mind, his own voice too full of blood for the vocoder to modulate it into words, into anything else but a wretched gargle. She clots at the blood and piss with the torn length of her white skirts, doggedly unflinching as her sleeves too are stained putrid yellow and bloody scarlet. The colors, so newly revived, nauseate him. The shouting draws nearer, and Vader rages at himself to move, rages at his vision not to waver, rages at his power for abandoning him. Were those voices more filthy rebels or belated Imperial reinforcements? He ought to crush them either way. He would, if his vision would clear, if his body would suffer him to use it. It was only flesh and machinery. It was only a tool. How dare it refuse to obey him? It was neither, as it turns out, as the voices sound clearer and clearer. Daddy! Daddy! Princess Leia cries out. Daddy, Lord Vader, he's hurt. We have to. The girl's voice cracks, sounding for once as young and scared as she really is, sounding truly like a 15-year-old girl surrounded by bloodshed and rubble. We have to help him, she snivels. And the thorn in his side appears. The Viceroy of Alderaan striding through the dust and smoke in the flesh, blaster in hand, and Alderaan's royal security officers on his heels. The man doesn't even hesitate, dropping to his knees and wrapping an arm around his trembling child, comforting her in the same motion that he draws her away from Vader's own side. The absence of her fumbling hands leaves him suddenly cold. The princess's father does not flinch nor hesitate, not even for a second. And before the darkness swallows him, Darth Vader realizes he must suffer the indignity of being rescued by Bail, Prester, Organa. He is without pain. That alone is shocking enough that even without a harsh electrical prod, he jolts awake, albeit sluggishly, to find himself floating in the warm, numbing confines of a Bacta tank, stripped down to what remains of his ruined flesh. There is a shadow before him, through the bleary haze of fluid. Bail Organa stands there outside the tank, arms crossed, looking up at him with a frown. Bitter hatred cradles Vader back into a sedated unconsciousness. Queen Brea Organa sits at her breakfast table in her dressing gown in the dead of night, a cup of rum-spiced cocoa in her hands, and stares at her damp-haired, freshly showered daughter and her rather disheveled husband. To be clear, she sighs softly, so hopelessly adoring of them even when they are being quite impossible. We have essentially kidnapped Lord Vader, Supreme Commander of the Imperial Forces and right hand of the Emperor himself. That is, our present state of affairs. Mom, Leia protests. Yes, dear, Bail answers her, sighing in fatigue. He saved my life, Leia declares mulishly. We're just returning the favor. Brea eyes her beloved child. A favor easily returned by remanding him into the care of his own men, not secreting him away on my husband's royal cruiser, and absconding with him back here to mine own palace, to mine own private royal medical facility. Dearest, you're using the royal voice on our daughter, Bale murmurs while Leia flushes. Brea arches a brow at her husband. I am having very royal concerns and reservations about this venture. That man could tear my household apart and raise my people to the ground. Bale, you know better than anyone the danger we have just placed ourselves in. Mom, if we turned him over, he'd just end up back in that torture device, Leia insists. And that, yes, was the crux of the matter. She'd seen the report on the suit they'd removed from their patient while in transit. Torture device was not at all an exaggeration. To say nothing of the overwrought, unwieldy prosthetics that were outdated at best and utterly barbaric at worst. There were a great many other horrific revelations to be discovered underneath the armor weave. The fact that the suit itself was anchored into his flesh with a mess of needles, the electrical prongs blatantly jutting into his neck, the override control on his lungs, which had been functionally disconnected from his own autonomous control in spite of being easily correctable, the feeding tube for which there was no discernible medical necessity, all of which still fails to address the fact that Lord Vader was direly dehydrated, poorly nourished, and had clearly been placed into that suit with unhealed burns that had continued to fester for a truly indiscernible amount of time. Where it was not deliberately designed to cause him pain, the suit clearly chafed and strafed at his raw skin, and if not for the astronomical amounts of antibacterials in his system, he ought to have died of infection years ago. He ought to have received rigorous medical treatment years ago, and yet the breadth of layered injuries suggests he rarely received any kind of medical treatment at all. The suit kept him alive and in pain in the most merciless of means. Darth Vader is a monster. But no, Brea unfortunately agrees with her daughter and her husband. Even he did not deserve that. Brea sighs. Very well, she agrees dully. It appears we shall continue to host our guest in utmost discretion. She eyes her daughter, who looks terribly relieved, and then her husband, who does not. Yes, Brea commiserates, that troubled look in his beloved eyes is about the gist of it. Vader claws his way through heavy syrup-sweet sedation towards consciousness, reaching out for the dark side only to find wisps. Next to nothing, even within himself. The absence of pain leaves him alarmingly weak. But beyond that, where is he? Where in the galaxy is the dark side so thin? He can hear the soft burble of various monitors, the lurch-thump echo of his own heartbeat, the soft rasp of what he must assume is his own breath, absent the harsh tones of his vocoder's amplification. He finds himself comfortable, nearly. Something lies against his skin, and it is soft. Nothing abrades against the sores and weeping wounds ever present on his flesh, nor burns with a fever itch, nor scratches coarsely against what little of him isn't wounded. He does not feel wounded. A soft sigh alerts him to the presence of another, eluding his grasping feeble senses up until that very moment, and driving him to fight anew against this intrepid infirmity. It takes an indignantly long time to open his eyes, and it is no reward to see none other than Queen Brea Organa of Alderaan in a chair at his bedside of all absurdities. She is not leering over him, at least, lording over his indignity the way Lord Sidious would. No, she is quite settled in the settee chair beside the biobed, lounging into the back of it, pursing her lips at a datapad, one knee tossed over the other, an elegantly sandaled foot circling lightly in the air. He stares without meaning to. The walls and ceilings of even the biobed itself is all washed in white, but Brea Organa is a beauty of tanned olive skin and thick sable hair, gleaming bronze and gold jewelry and rich layers of expensive blue fabric cladding her form, and it is almost too much color after half a lifetime of nothing but red and gray and black. Something alerts her, and her gaze lifts to his, yet she does not startle, nor blanch, nor narrow her eyes in derision, which he would expect. She holds his gaze coolly for a brief moment, and then sets aside her pad and leans forward in her chair. Lord Vader, she addresses him with crisp, formal courtesy, and in a manner that is no less than regal. You are currently being treated in the Royal Medical Suite of the Aldera Royal Palace. You were recovered from the blast site of the rebel attack on the Seleucami Trade Summit alongside my daughter. I am informed you saved her life. We could do no less in return. She dips her head. It is not gratitude in her eyes, merely acknowledgement, as if she had any power to pass a judgment on the likes of him. That was 8 days ago, Lord Vader. What? His thoughts freeze. Sidious would be displeased. We've had you in a Bactus submersion for most of that time between surgeries, Queen Brea continues, her tone courteous but implacable. You required a significant measure of tissue grafts, both internal and external, as well as replacement ports and assemblies for your cybernetic prosthetics. The previous models placed an incredible amount of strain on your musculoskeletal integrity. Were you aware? Your spine, shoulders, and collarbone and sternum all suffer from varying degrees of compaction and warping. It has been corrected, and in most cases we've latticed the remaining bone with carbolite reinforcement to prevent a resurgence of the issue. Her tone is bland. He can't say anything through the tubes in his mouth. Your lungs were not as irreparable as your prosthesis would have suggested, she continues. An enviable prospect, she adds a touch dryly. Enviable. He could sneer, but then recalls. Queen Brea had been gravely injured in the trials preceding her coronation. Her heart and lungs had been synthetically replaced. Given my understanding of how vital one's own flesh is in regard to your abilities, all effort has been made to maintain what little of it remains to you. She dares mock his power? She dares? It is one of his deepest shames, that in truth he lost much of his natural acumen with his limbs. As for a Force-sensitive, his flesh itself was a focus for the Force. Attempting to augment that, to replace that with mechanical prosthesis, was an effort in long, grueling futility. He would never recover his full capabilities, no matter how deeply he imbued the Force into his false augmentations. She meets his murderous gaze unflinchingly. It occurs to him a moment later that her daring was greater than it first appeared. No one would know that who was not familiar with the Jedi of old. It was not common knowledge that there was potency in the flesh and blood of Force-sensitives itself. As such, much of the repair was made through stimulation of your own cell and blood production and nanosurgical sculpting. She'd spent a significant fortune on him then. And for what, he wonders? Does she think to find him grateful? Perhaps she can sense his spite and disdain in his eyes, for she tilts her chin into her hand and eyes him aloofly. Perhaps you might recall, Lord Vader, that some years ago you delivered my husband to me when he found himself so intractably detained under Moff Tarkin's hospitality. He scowls, biting into the contraption, gently holding placement of his jaw, feeling his brow pull over his eyes. He recalls. He recalls the vacancy in the back of Bail Organa's usually affable expression, and the way his hands hadn't stopped shaking the entire journey to Alderaan from the cell he'd plucked him out of. He remembers the burst blood vessels crowning black eyes, and the cracks in his voice when the senator had nonetheless squared his shoulders and expressed his gratitude, offering one trembling hand out to shake as if Vader could not crush him in a moment of inattention. He had not shaken the man's hand. He recalls the way the brat princess had thrown herself at her father when he'd cleared the ramp of the ship, how Bail Organa had flinched but picked her up anyways. Queen Organa had been no more sedate, lifting her dress and striding at a gliding pace that was very nearly indecorous, before she wrapped her arms around the man and cradled the side of his cheek to stare into his eyes. She had noticed Vader only after her husband, gaze locking on him as he had stared to no purpose at this display. She had stepped aside of her husband and let her skirt drop with a swish, staring at the Sith Lord with unfathomable black eyes. He had turned and abruptly departed with a snap of his armor-weave cloak. "You did not do such a thing back then, out of any regard for me," she states, staring at him with a gaze as equally unfathomable, but no less lovely, with her rich brown eyes and thick dark lashes. "So that we understand each other, I am doing none of this out of regard for you, either." There is an air of threat about her declaration. "Better that," he thinks, "than pity." She stands and he can do nothing, prone and pathetically out of touch with his own power as she looms over him a moment and then lays a palm over his brow, frowning mildly. The touch is electrifying, excruciating in a way that doesn't hurt at all. He cringes from it, chest spasming, and yet leans into it with what little control he has. Pathetic. It seems fever isn't done with you yet, Queen Brea remarks, and then releases him from the burden of her touch. Rest. You've recovery yet to do. She adjusts something on one of the machines, and whether he wills it or not, sedation drags him back into sleep. The end.